and we will rise in your homes to do the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic of America, one nation, under God, indivisible, and justice for all. Thank you. And we will start by reading the meeting notice. This meeting is being conducted in compliance with the open meeting session that the Verona Board of Education passed a resolution at its annual reorganization meeting held on January 7, 2020. The meeting set forth the schedule of its regular meetings, which resolution was within 7 days of passage. The schedule was sent to the Verona Cedar Grove Times, the Star Ledger, the Herald News, Township of Verona, and the VEA. Postings of this meeting setting forth the time, location, and agenda were posted in each of Verona's 6 schools, board office, and town hall. This posting was also sent to the above newspapers, all SEA presidents and SEA liaisons. The Verona Board of Education operates under a consent agenda format. Any board member has the right to have an item pulled to be voted upon or discussed separately. Copies of tonight's agenda and resolutions have been made available to the public and the press. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Turner to do the roll call for attendance.
Mr. Allworth.
Here.
Mrs. Strappi. Mrs. Strappi.
I'm sorry,
Mrs.
here.
Strappi. Okay. Mr. Day?
Here.
Mrs. Prisco?
Here.
And Mrs. Freshy?
I am here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. So before we begin, we are going to open for public comments for agenda items only. So if anybody on the call wants to comment on anything that is on the agenda for this evening, Dr. Dionisio is going to open the queue for that. Dr. Dionisio?
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So at this time, I'll open it up to the Q&A session. Any member of the public who wishes to make any comment on any agenda item on the resolutions this evening can do so. On their keypad, all they would have to do is to press star and then the number 6, and then it will be prompting them as to where they are in the queue. I'm going to do that now.
Dr. Dionisio, I just want to add, I don't know how many people are attending our meeting this evening. I know it's a lot of, it's a big agenda. So if people do have comments, I just want to say that we generally don't limit the time, but I want to keep it to maybe a 5-minute limit until everyone has an opportunity to speak. Would we be okay to do that?
Yes. I think that's fair.
Yep. Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, I'll start the Q&A session now.
Thank you, Dr. Dionisio. There were no public comments on agenda items, so we do not have any presentations this evening, so we are going to move to Dr. Dionisio and the superintendent's report.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. So I have a number of items to be able to share with everyone. There's quite a bit of activity that's been occurring in the district on a number of different fronts that I'd like to just apprise the board and the community of. We did have a number of different committee meetings over the past week, so there will be some more level of detail in some of those committees that I'll let the board members provide as an update to the public. But the first item that I'd like to just bring up to, with everyone is just to give an update on the progress with the referendum construction across the district. So as many people know, we've been talking about this for quite a bit of time, at least a year, year and a half, especially of late with the progress is how we're doing with construction. So we have 17 projects happening at the same time. We're making some really nice progress. I'll just give a couple of highlights without getting into too many details, but the roofing project across all of the schools has been substantially completed. There still are items and work that is being done primarily at the high school and some other punch list items and finishing touches across the other schools. We have been told through all of our project meetings, we meet on two occasions every week with all of our different contractors and then separately with our construction management firm and our architects and engineers to make sure that we're staying on our timelines to be ready for the opening of school. So the roofing project is going to be completed in August. People who maybe have been around town and perhaps near the schools have seen a bevy of activity. The playgrounds equipment has been installed with all of the footings at all of the schools. Lanning Avenue School has all of the finish work done on the ground, the rubberized surface that's been installed. And that's being poured as well at FN Brown. And just making a lot of really nice headway on these projects. I'll leave the rest of the updates to the Facilities Committee to report out on. There's quite a bit there. But I did just want to bring some of the more key items to the attention of the board. The first is the change orders that are included in this evening's resolutions. We have a number of them that we've discussed as a board and we've discussed as a facilities committee. And a majority of them, there are a few that were credits to the district for work that didn't need to be done because of some minor adjustments to the architectural and engineering plans. But then there's a great number of them that really relate, quite frankly, to the locker rooms at HBW, the locker rooms at Verona High School, and the athletic trainer room at Verona High School. And the reason for these change orders is when the scope of the work is developed by the architects and engineers, it's, of course, impossible to understand everything that exists behind the walls prior to the demolition. And as we've reported in the more recent budget meeting, Board of Education meetings, we had the asbestos abatement that took place during predominantly the month of June. It started back in May and went through the month of June. And then once that asbestos abatement, which also included the demolition, occurred, that's when you really get to see what's behind the walls. And that's where adjustments had to be made for additional repairs and corrections that were unaccounted for. Happy to report that the project was under budget for the locker room, so we were able to have the money in order to be able to accommodate these change orders. And all of the change orders are necessary, and we reviewed those with our architect, engineer, and our construction management firm. Two other key points on the referendum, just to keep everybody updated on, and there will be the district, we're working on a press release that will go out via email to the entire community, and there's a short video as well that has photos and video of all of the different, at least a good portion of the different projects to give people some insight as to what things are looking like. So that will be, we anticipate and we hope it will be going out this week. But a couple of other items on of note to the referendum. HBW and FN Brown are slated to receive new windows, so it's a window replacement. All of the four other schools had window repairs. Their windows were not in need of replacement. The repairs have all been completed. As far as the window replacements for HB and for FN Brown, those are going to be delayed. So we now expect those. We received news this past week that the contractor expects to receive those windows in the fall. We're waiting to get a more accurate picture of that in writing from the manufacturer. Due to COVID, that's kind of thrown a monkey wrench in a lot of things, obviously across our country and the world, and specifically, you know, the manufacturing plants have also been impacted, where they've had shutdowns that have now caused delays in their production lines. So with regards to school being open in the fall, that's built into the contract that if there's no, we wouldn't obviously be doing the installation of the windows during the course of the day while students and staff are in school. That will all be on second shift work after the school is empty, and they'll be replacing those in the afternoon into the evening hours. So that's an update on the windows. And the last update is, as far as the referendum goes, is on the HVAC system, the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So as the board will recall, for perhaps some members of the public who are on this call will recall, we've been talking a lot about all of the projects. When we went out for the out to bid for the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning project for all of our schools, back in the spring, the first time we went out to bid on those projects, only the high school received a bid for the air conditioning and heating project. So that work is underway, and they're making a lot of really nice progress. As far as the other schools, we did not receive any bids whatsoever for those projects. That was right in the heart of the shutdown, a few weeks after we shut down for school, where there was a great deal of anxiety, especially in the Northeast and the tri-state area around COVID. We then rebid the project as quickly as we could. So we went right back out to bid, I'm going to say probably about 3 to 3.5 weeks later. At that time, we then did generate some interest in the rebid process, which was good. The problem was that all of those bids that we received came in significantly over budget. So we can't spend more money than we actually have allocated. When architects and engineers develop the scope of work and the cost estimates, they do it based on the data that they receive from all of the recent public open bids based on, you know, square footage for HVAC projects or whatever project it is that you're anticipating doing. So that's how it's priced out. So the numbers were good, but the price, the as far as the estimates go, unfortunately the bids came in very high, and the feedback that we received from the contractors was, you know, it was almost a month later than the original bid process where they did not bid on it. So that was one less month of job completion, and also the manufacturing at the manufacturing plant, the production at the manufacturing plant. So that was a constraint and a challenge. So in order to complete that work faster, there's a premium that's attached to that. So that was imposed on through the bid process to the district. Our timeline of being completed with this work, because it's heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, we need a heating system by law by October 15th. So the fact that the timeline was tight for them and with a month less of being able to get the work done, that drove up the cost as well. And then the fear that manufacturing plants, some of them were slowing production because of COVID, all of it was a perfect storm. So as a result of that, we went out to bid that we're legally bound to do on two occasions. And the second time we did not get any bids that were at or under budget, so we denied all of those bids, which then put us in a position to be able to go and now negotiate. By law, we're able to negotiate with the contractors who may be interested in having discussions with us on the completion of the HVAC work for the four elementary schools and HBW. So over the past several weeks, I've been working with our attorney, Mr. Roberts, our board attorney, Mr. Roberts, with our construction management firm and with the architects and engineers. We currently have six different contracting firms that are, at least right now, expressing interest in the work. We've put out a proposal to them for a negotiation, and we have a date set for that negotiation of August 13th, where we will sit down with them and try to negotiate the best price within our budget to then be able to execute the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning project across the district. So that's my update on the referendum. I know that the Facilities Committee will provide more of an update later on. Before I move on to any other topics, does any board member have any questions that I may be able to answer?
I don't have a question, Dr. Dionisio. This is Mrs. Drappi. But I would also like to add, just for the public knowledge, is that any of the funds raised through tax levy through the second question for the referendum can only be used for that referendum. So there has been questions as to why those funds that are not being currently used for HVAC can go towards other things, because we are legally bound to use those funds toward the HVAC for HBW and the four elementary schools.
That's correct. So once a question is put out to the public for a referendum, in this case, that's allocated for the improvement of our facilities, then there are clear rules and regulations that dictate how and what we could use that money for. So if we're saying that we've estimated that the costs for the air conditioning project will be X number of dollars, we have to go and use that money for that project, but we can't turn around and take a portion of that money and use it to buy, for example, PPE equipment or anything else, for that matter, to reopen schools. That money is specifically earmarked only for facility improvements, as it was written in the referendum question.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification. And Mrs. Drappi, thank you for bringing that point up, because there is a lot of misunderstanding around it. And understandably, it's a lot of information. So I think that is important for the public to be clear on. Does anybody else have any comments or questions for Dr. Dionisio in regard to his superintendent's report?
So if no other questions on the referendum, I'll shift to my second topic, and that's on most recently, the community received a letter from me on behalf of the district around race, culture, class, and identity task force. A letter went out on July 17th. And that letter was a follow-up to a prior letter that went out in June. And this letter had an interest survey to identify any community members, whether they're parents or not, students, to be able to participate, and inclusive of staff members, obviously, as well, to be able to participate in this task force, which we've gotten a great response on. As of a few hours ago, I went and checked the participation. We have 102 current volunteer participants to date. We will leave that open to see if there are other members who would like to join the group. Obviously, it's a very large group, so we're not going to be able to facilitate one large group discussion, but we can share information one way that way, and we could have a lot of avenues for getting people's ideas and input, but we're going to be following up in communications, and most likely we'll be breaking up into more manageable subcommittees So we're working on that development, that design. It will be ongoing communications with those participants as we move into the next few weeks and get ready for convening this fall. So that survey is still up. It will remain up and open. And we'll have that information up on our website. If anybody needs to track it down rather than searching their email, they can go up onto the website and go identify where that is and sign up. So very pleased with the response, and we're looking forward to getting that work going. And just piggybacking off of that as well, the Verona High School administration, Mr. Cogdill, Mr. Lancaster, Mrs. Gattaletta, and then Dr. Miller, and then Mr. Shells have been hard at work with our teachers over the past couple of months around a new course design. So English 4CP curriculum is being modified, and it is going to be identified as race, culture, and identity, and it is divided into two semesters. And both of those will address the theme of identity. So in the first semester, students will work and examine a range of sources in varied genres. They'll watch films and read novels and short stories and dramas and memoirs around identity. And then the second, and obviously it deals with a lot of diverse cultures. And in the second semester, it shifts to both fiction and nonfiction, inclusive of poetry, speech, essays by Black and African American writers. So. They've done a great job of enhancing the curriculum. The AP and the honors curriculum already has these themes embedded within it. So the next natural course, that evolution, is to ensure that the CP curriculum has that as well. So that will be for English 4. It's a senior English class that will start this fall. So I just like to thank all of the administrators and our teachers, Dr. Meyer and Mrs. Quick, who've been working really, really hard in their planning and preparation of these curricular changes. And then last but not least, this past week I shared an overview of a plan for school reopening that has come out of the amazing efforts and time of over 150 committee members that made up the school reopening task force. This task force was divided into five committees and 12 subcommittees, where they examined Department of Education guidelines in conjunction with additional insight from public health officials, the Centers for Disease Control, and other resources, in an effort to not only identify the challenges, but come up with creative and unique solutions. And the work's been going on for several weeks. Last week, we had the ability to be able to finally communicate where the direction of all of these members and the feedback was going, to provide a level of transparency and communication to our parents and to our staff as to a framework by which what it would look like for the potential reopening of school come September 14th for our students and our teachers, while at a minimum maintaining the top priority, first and foremost, of the safety and well-being of all of our staff and our students. So in an effort to do that, we obviously need to maintain a minimum of 6 feet social distance in our schools, predominantly in our classrooms, and also by wearing masks the entire time indoors. Now, along with that, this is challenging in many ways, because as we seek to find solutions to these problems, it often creates additional constraints and challenges that we have to navigate. And there is no one perfect plan that will satisfy the masses. It's just impossible. But with maintaining that safety is going to be our number one priority, and that will be non-negotiable, that 6 feet of social distancing with masks will be worn at all times indoors. There will be exceptions to the rule. Predominantly, if a child perhaps has a sensory issue, or there's another medical or health issue, that obviously those things will be taken into consideration, and the age of children too. So we have to navigate all of those things. In addition, we are looking at the schedule, and as we're taking a look at not only developing a schedule, which we've shared a little bit with the community on, that when we're looking at that schedule, the biggest constraint that we have is that our schools are at a minimum 70 years old, and in some instances 100 years old. Our schools were not built to be able to allow for social distancing. That's not what school was designed to do. So we are limited by the square footage in our classrooms. So when we take a look at what our student population is, while maintaining the social distancing guidelines, it is impossible to bring all students into the buildings, which thereby requires us to have a rotation and create these cohorts of students. Now, I will say that the plan is still being adjusted. You know, committees continue to meet. They continue to explore all options. We, at the high school, are facing the biggest challenge with our schedule, and that is because the variety and the richness of all of the different courses that we offer by nature in a high school, compounded with the fact that our classes change under this model, every 30 minutes, under a normal model, every 55 minutes or so. Every time we switch, that there is a reshuffling of the deck of cards, so to speak. So we have classes at the high school that are easily 25, and in many instances we have 28, and in some instances 30 or 32. Our classrooms, even if we were able to take that, let's say, first period class of 30 children, 30 students, and divide it into thirds, when we change to go to second period, the bubbles start to get created because you can't reset the clock or reset the schedule. So we may have pulled off a class of 10 in first period class, but when we move to second period class, that reshuffling of the deck creates bubbles in classrooms where now the number of students goes into 13, 15, 17 students, which we can't have in the classroom. We only have a limited number of areas where we have an auditorium or a gymnasium or a cafeteria where those spaces will need to accommodate study halls or classes where substitute teachers may have to come in and cover multiple classes while students are learning remotely. So we need to have these overflow spaces, but it does definitely pose a significant challenge from the operational standpoint to try to coordinate all of the workings of how school functions. On a typical day at Verona High School, we bring in 710 students, probably close to 70 staff members. We're knocking on the door of 800 people, and after the bell rings, you're reshuffling that deck every time, and that poses a lot of challenges. So the spirit of the letter was to try to capture where the direction of the 150-plus stakeholder committee is going and their review of all of the constraints and challenges and weighing all of the different options and grappling with some very difficult decisions and providing us some feedback to the administrative team. The letter provides an overview. And that's exactly what it is. There will be further communications from our building principals with additional surveys that will be more exact to finding out from parents what their intent is as to whether or not to send their child to school in September or to allow them to be homeschooled or entirely virtual. Our survey that we sent out, the intent and spirit of that is to try to get an understanding as of right now, from a more global perspective, where our parents are at and what they're thinking as to how they would handle how they would handle school in the fall for their children. We recognize the challenges. We understand this is not ideal, and that this poses a huge challenge and burden to families. And we're cognizant of that. But at the same time, we need to be able to create a school schedule that is safe for our staff and for our students, which is also why we have a four-hour instructional day. For the middle school and the high school, it goes a little longer than the 4 hours because we have to account for the passing time in between classes. At the middle school, we are going to try to limit the amount of passing between classes in the hallways, where our core teachers will be traveling from classroom to classroom and keeping the cohorts of students together. That's something that we are trying to execute. I will say that just to provide everyone a little bit of feedback as to where the survey is at, as of this afternoon, we had 1,026 responses from parents. Out of the 1,000-plus responses, 82% are currently sharing that their intent is to send their children to school with the alternating day schedule specific to that school, with the virtual schedule on the opposite day. That leaves 18% are stating that their intent is to keep their children home entirely for the virtual model, and about 1% intends on homeschooling their children. Why the survey feedback is also important is because if we have a better handle on how many students and their parents intend on sending their students to school and how many intend on keeping their students home, naturally, if we have less students who are intending to come to school, that allows us some flexibility, some greater flexibility with the school schedule, thereby perhaps, at least at the high school, the hope would be that it may be possible, depending on how the schedule works out and how many people intend to return, it may be possible for us to have a rotation that students would be coming to school more at the high school more than once a week. Instead of a four-day rotation, perhaps it could be a three-day rotation. It would have to be a significant amount of people opting to stay home entirely virtual for it to become an A-B rotation. Just by the nature of the rotating schedule makes it extremely prohibitive. So with all of that being said, principals will be following up. Our team continues to meet with the stakeholders. Our district administrative team continues to work on crafting the details of the plan that will memorialize our district strategic plan to the Department of Education that is due from the Verona Public Schools by the middle of August. We anticipate that there will be between now and then some adjustments to this schedule. I think that they will be minor, but based on the feedback that we continue to receive and the insight that we continue to receive, but we'll see what that turns out to be. We will be board approving that in the future. Principals, as I mentioned earlier, will be communicating out to their parental community. And I'll also like to add that, and the board's heard me say this before as well, there have been a number of different expenses that are unbudgeted for that are absolutely necessary in order for us to be able to pull this off. And a big part of that is a technology purchase that we're working on that provides teachers better technology, interactive laptop that they can write on, a secondary monitor that they can watch the students who are learning virtually from home on the synchronous live stream instruction. So while they're teaching in the classroom, they can synchronously see the students at home, and being able to have a higher quality camera that will be able to provide a better streaming quality and a better experience for the students for their learning and for the teachers for the teaching. While students are simultaneously in class and other students are at home. And this is no easy feat for sure for our teachers to undertake. And I commend them for their positive spirit and their efforts over the past several weeks. And as we go into the rest of the summer, as they're preparing for what the beginning of school may look like. From a facility standpoint, I will also say, to go on that technology piece, the technology expense is significant, and we're looking to finance that over 5 years, so it's less of an impact to the actual budget, so that way we can allocate our resources to some other things that are necessary. So, for example, the PPE and cleaning and disinfecting items in order to make sure that our schools are cleaned very efficiently and thoroughly every single day. We're changing HEPA filters in our schools to the highest MERV ratings, installing plexiglass. We've purchased masks for our staff and face shields and gloves, lots of additional soaps and sanitizers and dispensers, cleaning and disinfecting solution, plus we're getting our custodial maintenance staff trained and accredited through special organization to make sure that we have the proper protocols in place, make sure every school will be thoroughly cleaned each and every day. Wednesday would be a virtual day across the whole district on this current plan. So on Wednesdays we would do additional cleaning. That's also a day for our custodial staff to get caught up on some of the other things that won't be as much of a priority, because cleaning will be their number one priority each day on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday and Friday. Saturdays will be an additional catch-up day as well. And then last but not least, I know some parents had shared some information and feedback regarding, whether the ABAB is better model or to go Monday, Tuesday as an A day both days and Thursday, Friday with a B day both days. That is something that the committee, the stakeholder team, grappled with. Because we're deep cleaning and cleaning very thoroughly every single day, although the initial perception from some parents may have been that the A day would get a cleaner school than the B day students, that's simply not true. The school will be thoroughly cleaned and disinfected every single day. Every desk, every doorknob, every window handle, every chair, that will be the top priority. The concern of the committee with doing an AA day on Monday, Tuesday, and then the Thursday, Friday, the two consecutive B days, is that if students are going to be in school, every decision has a cost-benefit analysis, right, a plus-minus. Whereas if you go AA, then that student will not be in school for another 5 days. And that's what the committee was really struggling with in wanting to not have too long of a span of time for the students to be out of the building. So the fact that we have assurances that our schools will be disinfected and cleaned every single day, the group felt more comfortable in proposing that model. And I know that there's ongoing discussions, and parents, understandably so, have questions, they have concerns. There will be more communication that comes out. But, we're here to answer the questions, and there will be adjustments to the schedule as we move on. So we just ask that everybody continue to be patient, and we thank everybody for their support and cooperation. And that's all I have for the superintendent report.
Thank you, Dr. DeNicio. Does anybody of the board members have any questions or comments for Dr. DeNicio in regard to everything? That was a big report that is going on.
Yeah, this is Mr. Day. Just want to say, Dr. DeNicio, thank you for that letter and the plan. I know it's you had the group and committee get together and talk about it. I know it's still a work in progress, so I appreciate that. Quick question. I had some people reach out to me in regards to the plan and in regards to the holidays. A lot of holidays fall on Monday, or of course you have Thanksgiving. I assume that Wednesday, which was going to be, I guess, an off day for most of the schools, will that day be used to fill in for those holidays?
Yes, so that's a great question. So you know, obviously the plan that we put forward, you know, it was a 5-page communication, and you try to give everyone the what they need in the letter without getting too caught in the weeds, so to speak. But to answer that question, the answer to that would be yes. There would be an adjustment based on each week if there were like a day, especially like you mentioned, a Monday really throws a wrench in the plans. So there would have to be an adjustment that week so that way the schedule would not be thrown off. On a week that's like, let's say, Thanksgiving week, that would be a little less of an issue because it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of school with a Thursday, Friday off. So, but we would have to make an adjustment to the calendar for those weeks and create a special allocation of where those days fall. So that way, if you had an A day on a Monday, let's say, and there was a day off, that you don't lose that day. So we would make those adjustments wherever necessary. And I think that's where the fine details are in. Really have to go through it very carefully once we kind of peg down what this whole plan is going to look like for our community.
Thank you, Mr. Day. I'm going to add in that I would encourage parents, because this is very anxiety inducing and there's a lot of speculation and a lot of unknown and a lot of questions, which we welcome are coming to the board members. But when it becomes individual families with specific situations and specific concerns, I think the best course of action, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Dionisio, is to start at the building principal, because we're looking at the whole district, and we don't know specifics on individual schools and individual student plans. So I think it's best for parents and guardians to be comfortable to reach out to the building principals first and see if they can get more clarification.
Absolutely. And that's something that we always encourage, you know, from the chain of command and from being able to most effectively answer the questions for those parents, the specific needs. And oftentimes it's the building principal first. In other instances, it may be a director that can answer those questions. So if it's a question regarding a special education situation, we're still looking at those needs and the needs of those of our students and the age of our students as well. So this plan continues to evolve, and we're looking at all of that. You know, if it's a special education issue, I would encourage you to reach out to your building principal and Mr. Moriello, our director of special services. They'll be able to most effectively answer your questions for sure. You know, we're always here.
Yeah.
But we're most likely going to redirect you based on those specifics that you're talking about, Mrs. Fresky.
Yeah, and I just think that would help get families the answers that they're looking for more clearly and more quickly and efficiently. So, yeah, thank you for clarifying and validating that point. Does anybody else have any comments or questions for Dr. Dionisio?
Mrs. Fresci, this is Mrs. Drappi. First, I want to thank Dr. Dionisio for really getting ahead of this early on and looking at this before school was even over. And I think that put us in a very good position as a district to be better prepared and, you know, be a county and state leader yet again in, you know, in this kind of decision making. The one question that I do have is, how are these groups formed of this task force?
So what we did
outside of administrators, yeah.
Yes. So we ended up sending an communication out to all of our staff who throughout the whole district. We have about 360 staff, and anyone who wanted to volunteer, we took them onto the team. So it was approximately 90 staff members that were non-administrators volunteered for it. Our administrators were all on at least one committee. Sometimes there were administrators on two committees, but that was very rare. And then they were helping facilitate dialogue with committee members on the subcommittees. And then the principals reached out to their SCA membership. So the SCA is elected in, and those members represent that school. So the principals coordinated the participation from the parent group. In some instances, those parents were SCA executive board members for that school, and in other instances, they were not. So they participated in that dialogue. So we ended up out of the 150 people, everyone was able to participate. We sent out a follow-up survey that asked folks, you know, their areas of interest. So we had the five committees, and we asked them to prioritize which committees were of interest to them, and we tried to place them within the committees that they wanted to partake on and balance out the size of each group. Out of the 150 people, about 60% were comprised of, our teaching faculty and staff, non-administrators. Our administrators probably made up about 10%, and I would say about 30% made up our parent group.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad, too, that you just brought up the SCAs, because I think they're a very underutilized group. If each school has an SCA liaison to the board, I think it's a really nice resource for parents to tap into to get to know that liaison and bring some of those questions to the SCA liaison, who is going to bring it, whether they attend a board meeting, come with collective questions, and it can get filtered out more efficiently. Because there's just seems, you know, there's always chatter and people are talking, which is great, and then sometimes it's not in a really unified way where the right question is getting to the right person in a timely fashion, and I think it frustrates people. So I think the SCAs, like I said, I think they're underutilized, particularly the liaisons to the board, and I think that parents should really tap into that resource a lot more. I think particularly under these circumstances with so many moving parts and, you know, government, our governor coming out every day with different updates and, you know, the district pivoting to keep up with it all. So I think the more people that are involved and the more streamlined we could keep our chain of command and information flowing, I think everybody would benefit by that.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no other questions or comments on Dr. Dionisio's report, we're going to move to committee reports. And it looks like we had a busy week with committees. So we're going to start with the athletics committee, and that's Mr. Day and Mrs. Prisco.
Yes, hi, Mrs. Freshy, thank you. So we did meet last week with Dr. Dionisio and Mr. Merkler and Mr. Day and I to discuss a few things. It's a very light report, practices for the fall under the guidelines of the NJSIAA have begun. They're in phase one. Actually, phase one, I believe, just ended yesterday for all sports except football and field hockey, but they were in phase one. They need to be in each phase for 2 weeks. So I believe those other teams will be going into phase two. Football and field hockey should be starting their practices shortly, and then we'll be in phase one for 2 weeks and then jump over to phase two. With their season starting later than originally planned, I believe now tennis will start their first game, can start on, or match, I should say, on September 28th, and the other sports on October 1. Football will kick off on October 2nd. Let's see what else. The National Federation State of High School Association, we are receiving a camera that will be set up, actually two cameras. One will be mounted in the gym. One will be mounted in the upper field to, I guess, live stream games. And other thing, we have two resolutions on under the board policy. The allergy action plan, I believe, is reso number 12. And then just the approval of on Reso 13, the board approving us to be a part of the NJSIAA. And that's all I have. Mr. Day, do you have anything else to add to that report?
Nope, you did a good job. You covered all. Thank you, Mrs. Frisco.
You're welcome.
Are there any questions? You're welcome. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Mrs. Prisco on the athletic report? If not, we are going to move on to Mr. Allworth and Mrs. Drappy for the Education Committee report.
Thank you, Mrs. Freshy. Let's see. So we'll start with the resolution for the new hire for the social worker at the middle school, Ms. DeNotaris. She came very highly recommended, so we're very excited about that. Unfortunately, we also have a resolution for the resignation of Ms. Hurd at F.M. Brown for our ESL position due to personal circumstances. We're sad to see her go. ESY is in its last week. If it didn't finish last week, it was completely virtual. However, we were able to conduct some in-person evals with our child study team through the coordination of the Montclair Health Department, and that will continue until September. And we're looking at whether or not that is something that we're going to continue. Just looking at the report here. Looks like that's it for that report. Also, we are the AP test results for spring 2020 came in, and this was really amazing. These students who take AP tests never cease to amaze me. I'm sure I can speak for most of us, if not all of us. Despite all of the challenges that these students faced with remote instruction of this incredibly challenging work and with the nationwide technology issues that children faced with the AP tests themselves, our students still performed exceptionally well. Some highlights to point out, and again, remember, this was all through after remote instruction. This was done in their home. They had to be on a very specific program to prove, and they were locked in, to prove that they weren't cheating or getting help or anything like that. Some highlights were the chem scores of 93% with a score of 3 or higher. U.S. history, 97% of 3 or higher. World history, 94%. Right, it's really quite incredible. Music theory, 100% of our students scored a 3 or higher. So, you know, congratulations to all of our students. You know, that is truly a tremendous accomplishment. We repurchased the PICAPAC curriculum for our K-4 students through Title IV funds. We are going to continue with Mr. Bill Jackson in pushing our Dimensions Math series into grade 4. So next year it will be just grade 3 and grade 4, and looking to increase into other grades as the years go on. We will continue our professional development with Ms. Dana Clark to work on balanced literacy with HVW language arts curriculum and our special education teachers, and as well as professional development dates with our trainer, Dr. Joseph Goebel, for our world language teachers. And we have new teacher orientation taking place September 1st and 2nd. Looking to do in person, that's not set in stone yet, but obviously that would be ideal. And, you know, working still with the task force teams to finalize reopening. And that looks like that's it.
That was awesome.
Anything to add,
Kim?
That was
a lot. It was a lot, yeah.
Education committee is always a lot. So kudos to our AP students, like you said, that's really impressive, and to our AP teachers for facilitating all that. I mean, everybody just did an incredible job under the given circumstances. I just have a quick question, if either one of you could answer, and I'm not sure it was covered. Is there going to be any professional development in regards to technology and giving remote instruction, given our circumstances?
That was not covered. Maybe Dr. D'Anicio can better answer that.
Yes, that's part of actually the plan. It's not enough. I think the board's heard me and the staff's heard me say it enough times. I know we talked about it today when I had a subcommittee meeting with a group of teachers. You know, it's not enough to just give people technology and say, you know, pat them on the back and say, good luck with this. Like, you need to provide that support. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Miller, Mr. Balaj, our administrative team, our teachers, we're working on what does that look like. Because of the construction, our high school and middle school will most likely be off limits because there's just too much activity, and we're going to be down to the wire with the construction. And it's quite honestly unsafe to be in those spaces, and there's not availability. So we're looking at other schools in our district where we can maintain social distancing. It's going to be in person, and distribute the technology, and then also provide that level of professional development, whether it's in person, virtual, or a combination of the two. So we've got a lot of talented staff members who are great with technology and are willing to help. So we're going to tap into as much of that talent that we have here as possible.
Great. Thank you very much. Does anybody else have any questions or comments in regard to education report?
Dr. Nisha, a real question on the technology. Do we have the technology on order, or is it, you know, do we have some of that now? I know it's something that I know a lot of other districts will be battling for the same equipment we're going to try to get.
So the technology that we have is we ordered it already. We have those touchscreen interactive laptops that convert into tablets for our teachers, so that way as they write on there, they can communicate with our students virtually. The secondary monitors we should be able to easily get as well. The cameras, we don't have a time frame on. Now, our laptops have cameras built in, but we also purchased these additional high-definition cameras because, you know, part of the struggle is being able to have quality live stream with your students and with your teachers. So we invested that nominal cost. We're waiting on an ETA on when that will come. We just ordered those a couple of days ago, so the company is going to let us know what they anticipate. The hope is that we will be able to be on the forefront of that. I could tell you that I've been talking to other districts, and based on our plan, a couple of other districts, one actually today, another Essex County district, asked us to share, which we did, you know, what our plan is, and they're exploring similar options. So this is something that every district is looking at. And to your point, there's competition going on, right? There will be competition. So, you know, hopefully we ordered it soon enough, and it seems like we did. But so much of this really hinges on the production line and if these companies are affected by COVID as well. But it looks like at the minimum, the laptops and the secondary monitors will be here. And the hope is that those high-def cameras will be here as well.
Okay, great. Thanks for the update.
If there's no other questions for Education Committee, we are going to move to Facilities, Buildings, and Grounds, which was myself and Mr. Day. Mr. Day, do you want to take it away?
I'd love to. Thank you, Mrs. Bresci. I know Dr. D'Anicio covered many of these points. I'll try not to repeat what he said, but a lot to cover. We have resolutions 23 through 49 that we'll be voting on today, which encompasses the referendum items, facility items. So just to run down a few items, playgrounds, the playground at Lanning has been completed, and punch list review items will be moving forward on those items. equipment installed at FM Brown and Forest. It's been completed also. Brookdale is being installed now. As Dr. Denius said, the flooring is being installed next week, and playground should be completed within the next 2 weeks. The school property will still remain closed, though, so it's important for everybody to know remain closed during the construction, but also remain closed after that due to the transmission of COVID and the health crisis right now. So we're going to keep all the school grounds closed, most likely until the start of school. Is that correct, Dr. D'Anunzio?
That is correct. I will say we've had a few instances that we've had to intervene where we had some students going and more of the older age students going on the playgrounds. It's still an active construction site, and we can't have people there. So we have everything taped off and caution tape, and unfortunately there are still instances where people, adults included, are ignoring the caution tape and still going on to school property, but everything is closed.
Thank you. I just want to validate that. So yeah, and I do see people that try to use the field too. And if you do see that, you know, just please advise them, you know, the public that please do not use the school grounds. Again, it's a construction site. If you go by our buildings, you see a lot of vehicles moving in and out of there, trucks, you know, equipment that they just don't want to have anybody get hurt or be in the way or, you know, potentially impede the progress of the referendum item. So. Also, regarding the playgrounds, there will be fencing put around FM Brown Playground. That's being replaced. And then, of course, in Forest Avenue, you know, my kids went to Forest, and there's always something going on with drainage at Forest Avenue, so there will be some drainage work going on at Forest Avenue along with tree removal. So, and I've been going around in the mornings. I ride my bike, or I go run, and I go by many of the schools, and I see a lot of activity at the Forest Avenue School and all the other schools. You go by HBW, you see a lot of the stuff going on there. So very exciting things going on at our own school district here. So in regards to paving and masonry and railings, there's paving at high school to begin the first week in August, weather permitting, and landing paving work in progress right now. And there's also masonry work being done at all the schools. So that's being completed. High school lockers. The demo of the lockers has been completed. Delivery of new lockers is anticipated next week, and the assembly and install will take place on-premise. So the completion date is anticipated on time, so that's good news. Of course, we'll have all those new lockers, and we have to figure out whether the students will be able to use them or not. So that's another thing that we'll be talking about. I know Dr. Yunus talked about the HVAC, so you know, I don't need to go into that, but we're happy to have HVAC in high school, and you know, we're, as Dr. Yunus just mentioned, we'll be working hard to try to get the HVAC in the other schools as soon as we can. So regarding the roofing, again, he talked about the roofing being very significant on how much the completion is being done. I just want to say I was so impressed. One morning I was riding my bike at 5:45 a.m. I'm not the best sleeper. And I was riding my bike by the high school, 5:45, a whole bunch of contractors were on the roof working. On the high school roof, and so I was very impressed. I was like, these guys are working hard trying to get this done. So I was very happy, and so I reported that to Dr. D'Anunzio and Mr. Freschi of what I saw. So again, very happy to the work that's being done on all the schools and those roofs that are being done. To continue on, I got a few more things. The new gym, the floor has been removed. Painting of the walls in progress. The floor is being completed. Installed beginning next week. The new bleachers are being delivered, anticipated for late September due to manufacturing delays as a result of the health crisis. So, again, working forward, you know, moving forward with the high school gym. The corridor wall tiles we'll be putting on Monday, and the floor tiles will be delivered in mid-August. So that will be, again, a work in progress regarding the wall tiles and the floor tiles. Regarding the stage rigging, demo and abatement is completed. The project is progressing and moving forward on time. I know Dr. Denise had talked about the windows. The HPW track, the demo and drainage is complete, and the surface install is expected to begin in the next 2 weeks. So I know that's something we've been very excited about. We've been repairing and patching and working on this track for quite a while and trying to keep it going. So I'm glad to see we finally have a new track that we'll be proud of, and happy to have our track team and other folks using that, and you know, be a great resource for the public too. And then finally, painting. The FNB auditorium and stairwells are being in progress of being painted. It's a repair of the water damage that was due to the roof, water damage, and so the roof project will help with that too. So that's about it. We're going to be rekeying the district, again, working with boils and fire detection, and so, again, a lot of good things going on in the district. So any questions by the other board members?
It doesn't seem so. Mr. Day, thank you very much. That was very, very inclusive.
Thank you.
And if nobody else has any questions for Mr. Day, I don't have anything to add to that report. He did cover everything that we spoke about. We have, again, Mrs. Prisco and Mrs. Drappi, who met for community resources.
Yes. Thank you, Mrs. Freshy. This is Mrs. Prisco. So we did meet with Dr. Dionisio, and basically everything that was on our agenda for community resources, Dr. Dionisio did go over thoroughly in his superintendent report regarding school opening plan. The race, culture, class, and identity task force was discussed with regarding the new course for English 4 for seniors, and the referendum, which has been discussed a few times. So the one thing I encourage any parents that are listening or out there just to do the survey regarding the school opening if they haven't done so already. And also I'm looking forward to seeing when Dr. Dionisio puts out the referendum updates with some photos. So I'm looking forward to seeing how things are coming along with that. So again, thank you to Dr. Dionisio and all the staff members for everything they've been doing to work on the school opening plans. And Mrs. Drappi, I don't know if you have anything else you'd like to add.
Nope, that's it. Thank you, Mrs. Prisco.
You're welcome.
Does anybody have any questions or comments in regard to the community resources report? If not, last but not least, we had our finance subcommittee meet as well, and that was myself, Mr. Turner, Dr. Dionisio, and Mr. Allworth. And Mr. Allworth, I'm going to give that to you.
Sounds good. All right. So the first couple items were already covered, the referendum update, the number of change orders that we'll be approving, and a lot of the technology upgrades that we're getting for virtual instruction. We went over all of those already, so I'll skip over those. We got our extraordinary aid amount. It was reported to the district at $465,426. We had actually budgeted for a little less, so this is good. You know, we're expecting to end the year, you know, in a surplus, so I think we're in good shape. From that standpoint, a number of people are going to be getting some refunds from the food service. When we went into quarantine and stopped attending school, a number of people had already prepaid for their food service. So that money has still been kind of sitting there, and the decision was made to kind of clear the books to simplify going into next year. So everyone who had money prepaid will be receiving refunds prior to September. I believe it's going to go back right onto their credit card, but they'll be getting a notice in the mail explaining where that money came from, so they don't just get surprise money. Our DUNS number renewal has been renewed. It is a federal ID number that's used for grant applications of federal funds, so Mr. Turner went ahead and renewed that for 5 years. You can renew it for 1 year or 3 years, but he decided 5 years would be the best way to do it. That way we're set for the next few years and not have to worry about it. Mr. Turner also found a number of old bank accounts as he's been looking through our finances. So he has closed those accounts, and they're pretty much old accounts that have not been used. And he's closed them and moved them into our general operating account to help our cash on hand for everything that's been going on. Just, you know, and it just simplifies our books, makes it a lot easier. It's money that was just kind of sitting there, and now we can put it into you know, one account that's easier to use, and that it's not just being wasted. And, you know, we're closing up on last year's fiscal year. There's a couple invoices that may still be coming in, but for the most part, last year is closed, and we're opening up the 2020-2021 school year. And Mr. Turner is going to, you know, continue to take an active role in all of our finances moving into next year, making sure that everything's as accurate as possible. And I think that was about it.
Yeah, I think you covered everything. I think it was interesting in regard to some of the bank accounts that Mr. Turner was able to consolidate, because one of them was from 1994, so it dated back 26 years. And the district received a letter saying that if nobody claims this money, it was going to go back into unclaimed money back to the state. So luckily we were on the job there and we were able to get everything consolidated. I think that you covered everything. I'm just looking through my notes as well. The one thing that we talked about that I don't think you mentioned was, we put it on our calendar to be reminded for going into January when we do our reorganization that we are going to put out RFPs to different banks and just see. Right now we have Investor Savings as our bank of record, and if there's, you know, higher interest rates or something going on where we can make our money work for us a little bit harder. So we're going to get RFPs out probably in December to go into the new year with that.
Yep.
And the other thing I think that we spoke about was through our healthcare broker, Brown & Brown. And it's new this year, and it'll benefit our employees. Like, all of our employees will be able to have their personal employee portal, where they are going to be able to manage their own open enrollment, and if they have a life-changing event, you know, a marriage and they're adding people or have a baby and they need to change up their health care, they are going to be able to do that directly now through their own personal portal. And that's at no extra cost to the district. That's something that Brown & Brown is offering this year.
You're correct. It's free, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's good. It gives people a little accountability and hands-on with their stuff. Other than that, I think we covered everything. Does anybody have any questions on the finance meeting?
No.
No, if not, we are going to move on down our agenda. And the next item would just be open discussion items. So I just want to put out in there that during the summer, we generally have develop our district goals and our board goals coming into the new year. So that's something that got put on the back burner a little bit with the reopening of school and everything else that's been going on. So we do want to make sure that we get our district goals and our board goals together. Also, we completed our chief school administrator, which is our superintendent. We completed his evaluation and met with him and delivered his evaluation. That's something that is part of CUSAC, and it is something that Verona Board has been always very good at, having full participation of the board. And we've also completed our self-evaluation. So I put a note out to Charlene Peterson, who is our New Jersey School Board's field representative for Essex County, and she is coming, whether it's virtual or Zoom meeting, for our August meeting to meet with the board to review our self-evaluation. And I think that's really important to keep up our relationship with her, and she knows who we are, and she's very responsive and an excellent resource for the board. And I think it's a nice best practice, particularly because we're a relatively young board and we have new members. So it's always good to keep ourselves accountable and in check as well. So she will come to our August 24th meeting. Does anybody else have any discussion items?
No, if not, I'm just flipping through my pages here. We can move on to do a roll call to vote on resolutions. So I need a motion to approve resolutions number 1 through 50.
Mr. Day, so moved.
Moved by Mr. Day, and I need a second.
I'll second that,
Mrs. Prisco. And Mrs. Prisco, second. Is there any discussion on any of the resolutions, number 1 through 50?
I have a quick question, Mrs. Freshy. For resolution number 40, it looks like there is a typo. It looks like there's a 2 in the thousands place where there should be, I suspect, a 3. And
I'm rolling to
just too many digits in that period.
Yeah, I see that. Dr. Deeney, Mr. Turner, do you see that?
Yes, I see it.
Mr. Turner, is that supposed to be $1,403,400 and no cents?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Show that adjustment to the agenda. We'll reflect that in the minutes.
Thanks for catching that, Mrs. Drappy.
Yeah. I'd like to just ask one more question. The book adoptions for resolution number 5.
Scrolling back up.
I guess being a new board member, I wasn't aware that we had to have a resolution for book adoptions. Can this be explained? Or what are these books? What is this for?
So this was probably covered during the education committee. This is for all books and all films must be approved by the Board of Education, and they run through the Dr. Miller with the education committee and also through typically the supervisors and the curriculum council. So these are new texts. I don't have any specifics on it. On the education call, I don't know if anybody who will have any detail from that.
That was me, and we discussed the changes to curriculum for grade 10 and grade 12, and then we discussed the standards changing, but that these two books were not discussed, so that's just why I was a little confused. But okay.
Yeah, I'll reach out to him. We could direct to Dr. Miller, and he'll be able to give us some insight on those specifics.
Great, thank you. That was it. Thanks.
Go ahead, Jim.
Mr. Day, resolution 16. I know, and this I think this came up last year too, regarding the sports teams. One of the teams I see missing is Verona United for the soccer. I know they use the field and the grounds in the fall in a normal year. I'm assuming they would still use it this year, so I just want to make a note that maybe have them added to this particular list.
I'll check with Mrs. Soblersky and see where she's at on that, and we could always add them in the future at the next board meeting.
Yep.
Thank you.
Anything else? So we can do a roll call to vote on those resolutions. Mr. Turner?
Mr. Allworth?
Yes.
Mrs. Drappy?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Yes.
Mrs. Prisco?
Yes.
And Mrs. Freshy?
Yes.
Motion's passed.
Excellent. We also have addenda resolutions, number 1 through 7, that we also need to vote on. So I need a motion to approve the acceptance of resolutions number 1 through 7.
I'll motion, Mr. Allworth.
Mr. Allworth moves the motion.
I'll second, Mr. Day.
And Mr. Day seconded. Thank you. And do we have any discussion on the addendum resolutions 1 through 7?
No.
No.
So if no, we are going to ask Mr. Turner to call the roll to vote.
Mr. Rawler.
Yes.
Mrs. Drappy.
Yes.
Mr. Day.
Yes.
Mrs. Prisco.
Yes.
And Mrs. Freshy.
Yes.
Motion's passed.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Turner. And then lastly, we will be opening the floor again to public comments, and that is open to any topic that the public wishes to comment on. And again, I'm going to ask that we, if there's a lot of people on the queue, that we might look at a five-minute mark to give everybody an opportunity until we go around, until everybody has an opportunity to speak. So with Dr. Dionisio, we'll open the floor to public comments and allow people to get on queue for that. That would be great.
Absolutely. So just another reminder for those people, because I know some people have been getting off the call and on the call, so just to reiterate what we mentioned earlier regarding public comment, I'm going to enter into the Q&A session. And for any member of the public who would like to speak about any comment, please just press *6 on your telephone keypad in order to be able to get into the queue to be able to have several minutes to speak. I'll do that now. Mrs. Garcia, how are you?
Yes, good, thank you.
Just name an address, please, before we get started.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, it's Meg Garcia, and I'm at 8 Brentwood Drive. First, I just want to thank everyone who put time into planning the return to school plan. I know you're in a position you never thought you'd be in, and I can't imagine the work it took to put that together. I'm also thankful for the half-day plan. I think for the young children, it's very considerate of their needs and their ability to keep a mask on and stay in a seat for any length of time. I do have a big concern about the live streaming, the privacy issues that it presents for the children. Anytime a teacher redirects, anytime a teacher has to give extra help, it's now broadcast to the community. I did address my concerns, as you said earlier, the board discussed the chain of command. I'm a member of the SEA board at Lanning, and I brought this up in our meeting with Mr. Poyne last week. I discussed it with Dr. Miller on the phone last week. He said that that has come up as well in other discussions, that there was talk of perhaps using a number to identify students. I really hope that that's not going to be the case, because that not only does it fail to protect privacy, it's just another way we're kind of taking away any warm, nurturing feeling that could possibly be left in a school. I reached out my concerns to Dr. Dionisio and to the board on Friday, so hopefully this sounds familiar to you. However, I didn't hear anything back from anyone. I did follow a chain of command, but I have been a public school teacher in Morris County for 20 years, and I know I'm held to a standard of responding to a parent within 24 hours, even if it's just to say I got your concerns and I'm working on it. So, moving forward, I have to say I'm concerned about the respect. SEA, as an SEA board member, the first time I spoke to anyone about my opinions on the plan was last Tuesday, and the plan was released Friday, so I'm not really sure any of our feedback or issues were communicated in time to be considered. I also am concerned about how this information was communicated to the staff. This is already an extremely stressful, anxiety-producing time. It's not a time for teachers to be treated with any sort of disrespect or to feel unsupported. I do hope I also spoke with Dr. Miller about staff training in all of this new technology and new way of working. I do hope that it will be done not on a voluntary basis, but in giving these staff members supported time to get in and learn what the increasing expectations of parents want them to do. And I do hope the board will follow up. I know Dr. Vianisio, he does not answer to parents. I'm slightly concerned about the rapport right now with the staff, but it's the responsibility of this board to make sure that future information as this plan changes is communicated with all stakeholders in a respectful way.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Garcia.
Thank
you. I can speak to a few of those points. So thank you very much for your perspective and your point of view. We really appreciate you sharing that. I can share with you that the administrative team has been handling a barrage of emails, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Sure.
We've received, I myself am probably receiving about 300 emails a day, and that's on top of managing all of the stakeholder committees, getting feedback. In fact, the feedback that's been provided from the administrators, from the parents to the administrator facilitators, is all in Google Docs, and we're on the phone constantly having follow-up meetings around the discussion. So I can assure you that the feedback from the parents and from the teachers has been included, and there's no one model that's going to satisfy everyone. I think we all understand that. I can share that, you know, everybody's feedback is being listened to and incorporated to the best of our ability, while at the same time trying to maintain the operational standpoint of how schools do function. So we'll continue to do that. We'll continue to get everybody's feedback. And I do know that I did follow up with Dr. Miller. He shared with me your concerns. We did receive your email regarding the privacy concerns that you have. We'll continue to explore that. And we're trying to find a realistic middle ground so that way we don't have a problem where, you know, if we don't do live streaming, the challenge then becomes that our students will lack that communication with their teachers and the quality of education will deteriorate and will not be provided. So there's no perfect solution here. So we'll continue to move forward and figure out the best path that we could take.
Hello?
Okay, Mrs. Heffern?
My last name's Heffern, and yes, thank you. Hi.
Hi.
83 Franklin Street.
Perfect, thank you.
So my question was just to try to get a sense of a timeline when parents would have a finalized plan, specifically related to, you know, what group their child would be assigned to so that we can make appropriate work and child care arrangements. And my secondary question was, will there be aftercare this year?
So two very important questions. The first one on the timeline, as I mentioned earlier, the administrative team continues to meet. We continue to have committee meetings. In fact, I personally had one subcommittee meeting today, received some more insight from the group. I know others did as well over the past few days. So the administrative team will be meeting continuously throughout this week. We hope that someday, one day next week, our principals will be sending out by then another communication where we can have some more firm plans that are, you know, as we all know, being adjusted as we speak, and be able to get that survey out to the parents from the principal to understand their intentions. And then that way we can end up, coordinating that side of things. On your second question regarding aftercare, I have a meeting this week with the YMCA to discuss their ability to help support before care and aftercare while maintaining social distancing and the use of masks as well with those protocols. So we've always been very appreciative of the partnership that we have with the Montclair Y. It's my hope that that continues and you know, it appears that they are very willing to help us out and to be a partner with us in this. So also by next week, I would hope that we have some more information on the before care and the aftercare that can help facilitate this process for families.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hello, Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown?
Hi, it's Jody Brown. I'm sorry.
Hi, Mrs. Brown. How are you?
Good. How are you? I'm at 158 Good. Franklin Street. I have two quick questions for you. The first one is, West Essex released their plan today, and I was able to look at it online, and it's, I think, five phases. So it starts off very similar to the high school plan, since they are only a secondary school, with them going the one day a week or half a day, whatever. But then it does give five phases to gradually get them back into school more, I guess, based on, I don't know. And that's my question. Like, do we have something in place like that to get them into school more than 4 hours in the high school? And how do we move forward? Like, you know, New Jersey's numbers are very good right now, so I don't know what we're basing it on. Not Verona, I just mean as a state in general, as to how we get them in school more than they're already in.
Right. So I think a lot of this will be dictated. Oh, go ahead.
The other question I have is, you know, I commend you guys the way you threw together remote learning in the spring. I don't envy any of you. But I think what the spring did teach us is that all remote learning is not created equal, and especially at the high school level. And if it happens that we have to go all remote for whatever reason, will there be department heads monitoring what is going on with some of these high school teachers, that it's not just an assignment on a Google Classroom, that they're actually being taught? Because that was not the case with a lot of classes in the spring.
Okay, so I'll start with your first question first. So on the scaling up, you know, the plan that we have in place is based obviously on the current circumstances and the current public health standards. So there will be, which is the most immediate concern that we have, because that's what it's looking like it will be for September. Our hope's that at some point this virus evaporates and, you know, hopefully the vaccine comes sooner than later. So, but we have to be prepared for September, and then we also have to be prepared for, you know, if things unfortunately and could potentially get worse. So from, I think this goes when we'll address your second question as well, to maintain some consistency across pre-K through 12, to be able to have that piece that allows us to pivot virtually and allows us to utilize the technology and harness that while we're in this hybrid model. And then if we have to, and we hope we don't have to, pivot to a more virtual for everyone, that we have that ability there. If we end up getting more parents at the high school level who are opting to keep their students home virtually, that will also alleviate a little bit of the pressure in the scheduling and allow us to bring more students in who want to come to school, while still educating those students virtually at home. And it's our hope that with doing more synchronous live instruction on a regular schedule, and there's no easy fix, there's no perfect solution on this, but by having a first period at the same time every day for, you know, whatever that designated time period is, 30 minutes or so, and a second period at the same time every day, if it's your designated day in school, then you're there physically with the teacher. And if you're not, it's not your designated day, then you're able to be home and be, you're going to be required to log in and to be live in that class and participating, and attendance will be
right. Changed. I understand that. So as long as we're doing a hybrid, that's the plan, that she will be in class. I mean, are we doing that they do every class every day at the high school, or are we doing some sort of a block schedule?
No, we would not be doing the block rotating schedule that the typical schedule. It's just, we're trying to maintain as much simplicity as possible, and consistency as well. So the model that's being discussed right now is a straight 1 through 8 period day for our students.
Okay.
For a minimum amount of time. You know, I'll use the 30 minutes as an example, because that takes us to about 4 hours of instructional time. So that's what we're looking to do. Now, if we can figure out a way as we're scheduling to get more students in, I think that's a win-win then for everybody, to get more face-to-face time, as long as we can maintain that 6 feet social distancing. And that's something that, you know, we're working out right now.
So basically, it's based on the guidance from the state. That's how I'm understood. In other words, as long as it's 6 feet of social distancing, they're going to school 4 hours a week.
They're going to school physically 4 hours a week. The rest of the time will be
right.
Virtual. Correct.
Right. Now, so until that's lifted, which is probably not going to happen until there's a vaccine that I, you know, that's now. And the other question I have, you know, I'm going to probably overgo my 5 minutes. What would it happen that we'd have to close down? Like if one kid gets a fever at an elementary school, do we close down? Like how is it decided if we go all remote?
So, you know, there are a lot of variables to that, but when we, as part of the plan as well, we have, we work closely with our district physician, we work closely with our local public health department. So, you know, if it's somebody has a fever, that's not going to shut school down. That's not going to quarantine people. If there's symptoms and a case of a positive case of COVID, then we have to follow quarantine rules, guidelines, and contact tracing. So then that will require, obviously, a student who or a staff member who may have tested positive for COVID to have to quarantine for a minimum of a minimum number of days, 14 days. But also, it will have to quarantine people who may have come into contact with them. So that's why maintaining these small, socially distanced cohort groups is really critically important in how we design this. There has to be a method to this, so that way the groups are very controlled.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right, you're welcome. Thank you for your questions. Mr. Cosby.
I think that's a canine question.
Hello?
Mr. Kozacek, your turn.
Yes. George Kozacek, 100 Morningside Road. For the last 25 years, I've been a proud Verona resident. I sent 3 children through Verona's school system, and my 4th youngest son, who will be a freshman this fall, told his mother and myself that he wants to raise and live in Verona. Needless to say, my family, myself, love this town. I have, without fail, always supported referendums, tax increases, to make Verona's school system the best it can be. That being said, I'm speaking tonight to express my extreme disappointment with Superintendent Dionisi, the Verona School Board, and the Verona School Administration. As a tax-paying citizen and parent to the students at the Verona High School, my opinions, concerns, and questions should be heard, respected, whether or not you believe they are right or wrong. Back in 2014, when Superintendent Dionisi began his duties, he stated that one of his goals was to build positive relationships through open, honest, and purposeful communication with parents to ensure continuous improvement. It was a goal that in 7 years has not yet been achieved. Not only were my emails about the in-person graduation this year met with disdain, my thoughts and concerns were also dismissed. I was called rude, accusatory, and disrespectful by Dr. Dionisio. I was also told that I was highly misinformed. Although I saw in-person ceremonies in Cedar Grove and other local towns carried out safely and successfully, Dr. Dionisio told me I was not able to distinguish among fact, opinion, and reasoned judgment.
When I think of a superintendent, I think of a leader, not a man who's condescending and belittles parents who pay his salary. While VHS did end up having an in-person graduation, it was thrown together haphazardly and without much care, in my opinion. As with many of your actions related to the school system, Mr. D'Annunzio begrudgingly gave in to in-person ceremony that over 100 students and the parents wanted. He let it be known he was not supporting this in-person graduation when he sent out a questionnaire to 17 and 18-year-olds, some who have no longer had access to their Verona.org email accounts. Not taking into account the graduating class parents is outrageous and insulting. Mr. D'Annunzio also made it clear that he wasn't supportive of the in-person graduation when he made students stand, not sit, for over an hour without water or bathroom facilities in 85-degree heat on Sampson Drive while waiting for the ceremony to begin. Then, when the graduation finally did begin, there was no commencement program, speakers, videographers, diplomas. We got a video from an iPad with half the kids being shown. In response, in addition, not every graduation student heard his or her name called. Dr. D'Annunzio clearly felt pressured by parents and the community at large to make this ceremony happen. In response, he behaved like a peeved 10-year-old child by showing zero regard for Verona seniors and their parents. A BOE member even apologized to me and other parents for the horrible effort displayed. You claim that mental health is a priority in your school system, but treating the seniors and their parents the way you did on July 8th made it clear that you don't care about them emotionally or mentally during this difficult time. Frankly, Mr. D'Annunzio, I'm sick of you treating me like a second-class citizen in my own town. Yes, you have the power, but that power stems from us and the Verona community. We are responsible for paying your $250,000 plus or minus salary that you make. Don't forget that when you hostilely respond to parents showing concern about bullying and blatant racism in the hallways of Verona school, your lack of leadership is appalling. In addition to that, your lack of transparency is just frightening. By perpetuating putting Band-Aids on bullet wounds, you're effectively destroying this town that I love so much. Please take us, your fellow citizens, into consideration and run your school intelligently instead of politically. That's my comment on that. I have a couple of questions. I don't know if you want to comment on that or go straight to the question.
Sir, your 5 minutes is up. This is Dan Roberts.
No, there wasn't. It was about 5 minutes. It wasn't 5 minutes, okay? I just looked at my time.
You can come back at the end of the line if you'd like to speak more.
No. You don't have to cut me off. You don't have to do that again.
I did. Thank you.
So thank you very much for those comments. I will not go back and forth on that, but I will just say that I had communications with Mr. Kozachuk, and clearly there's a difference of opinion, and there are a lot of facts that the board and I are privy to, and Mr. Kozachuk is as well, and we'll just leave it at that. We'll move on to the next comment at this moment. So next comment is we have Mr. Barrows.
Hi, thank you very much. This is Chris Barrows, 219 Linden Avenue. I first actually want to start off just to say I've had conversations with the majority of this board at some point on this topic, and I want to just actually start by commending one of the things I learned earlier, which was the approach taken with technology, not just providing technology, but also thinking outwardly about how are they going to use this piece of technology. This has been a big conversation that I've had with the board over the years, so I really want to say thank you. I appreciate that. I do want to pose a question that someone else who could not attend the meeting asked me to share, and then in addition, I have just a small question more for deeper long-term thought. You may not have an answer today, and that's fine. Someone did ask me to ask, however, if someone decides that they wanted to go from, say, homeschooling and then change midway through to go into the school, what would that process be, and would it even be possible? The second thing, and this is from me, is that as we think about technology in the future, I understand the challenges of the budget. But if the opportunity were to provide more instructional technology, more instructional technology education to the parents, not the parents, the teachers, would this be something that you would look to do with the budget if the budget was better? The budget is garbage right now, and I know that you've lost a lot of money, unfortunately, due to COVID. So that's my only other question. I do want to say before I finish that if there's any help I can provide, I have a master's degree in instructional technology, and I would be more than happy to offer any help that I can to the school system during this time. So please feel free to reach out to me. I believe at least 4 of you have my contact information. So just want to put that on the record as well. But thank you very much. I really do appreciate, again, the efforts, and that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. So I'll answer the first question first. The question was, if a parent initially chooses to either homeschool or keep their child home for an entire virtual learning experience, what does that look like if they then change their mind and would like to opt to send their child to the current alternating schedule model, or whatever model we're in at the time? We are looking at that, and we naturally will have to set some set of parameters for a duration of time, because the schedule that will be built will have to be built around how many students we anticipate coming into our school. So the administrative team is working out those details. It will likely be an extended period of time. One of the things that the committee has proposed is that it may be a minimum of a month, but it could be as long as the marking period, which is typically 10 weeks, to then be able to reevaluate. But that's all fluid as well, depending on if there's room in the classroom and to be able to maintain that social distancing, then we would try to accommodate that request, because our goal is to try to get as many kids into school as long as it's safe for them and safe for our teachers. Secondly, first of all, I'd like to just, thank you for providing your support from an instructional technology standpoint. I will have Dr. Miller reach out to you. I think that, any additional insight and perspective we can get to help our teachers is overwhelmingly welcomed. So we'll look at that, and we'll reach out to you. And to answer your question is yes. If we had more money in the budget, then we would want to be able to provide more technology and professional development for our teachers. Just a little bit of a snapshot. We've evolved quite a bit. This board knows it. I know a lot of our parents know it. Because of the referendum back in 2014, the district in 2014 did not have wireless access across the district. It was, to say it was inadequate is an understatement. The community wholeheartedly supported that referendum, which allowed us to scale Wi-Fi access, which was critically important. The district, with support of the SCAs and VFE, and the Board of Education, we devoted a ton of resources into Chromebooks for our students and for our teachers. And now we got to the point where, because of this challenge with COVID, we needed better quality technology in the hands of our teachers if we're going to truly support them in the delivery of instruction. So that's where we're at now in trying to make this purchase to put that technology into our teachers' hands. So if money was no object, then yes, we would want to devote more resources to that that area. And as everybody knows, most recently, as a result of COVID and the impact to the state economy, state aid has been cut in Verona by $182,000, which we obviously had to make adjustments in our budget. And at the end of August, we'll be hearing more from Governor Murphy as to whether there are going to be any additional cuts, and we're keeping our fingers crossed, and we hope that that's not the case. But does that answer your question, Mr. Barros?
I think that does for now. I'd love to talk, you know, in the future where we're thinking on that kind of 5-year plan of instructional technologists, more of them, et cetera, in the school. But right now, I mean, it's an unrealistic situation. This is kind of the thing that's always on my mind. So I appreciate it, and I think we learned quite a few things last year. And I think the big thing on a lot of parents' minds is the equaling out the education, no matter who's being taught. And I think obviously the steps you're taking are working towards that. So I thank you for that. And like I said, my email or my phone is available if I can do anything to assist. So thank you for your time.
Perfect. Great. Thank you very much. I'll definitely be reaching out. Okay, our next caller, 646 number, if you could please just say your name and address.
Hi, Marissa Sperling, 152 Forest Avenue. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you just spell your last name, please?
Sure. S as in Sam, P as in Peter, E-R-L-I-N-G.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. So actually, the last call answered my first question about the virtual timetable for deciding back and forth if you wanted to do virtual or be in school, so thank you. My second question was about the HVAC system for the middle schools and the elementary schools. I know you said initially that they would need to be complete by October 15th, so at this point you were not really looking into starting any work, even if you had a bid. But when would you be looking at that again? Would that be next summer?
I think that's my first. Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Yep. Okay.
My second question.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. My second question is about guidance and counseling. So, you know, during the
I'll ask my question.
What?
So exactly, if they had a bigger budget, they said, what's that? I said, you know.
Hello?
Mrs. Sperling, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
Oh, no. So then my second question was just in regards to guidance and counseling for the students. So, you know, we received a few calls during the spring, you know, checking in on our students, which was really nice from some of the guidance counselors and other school staff. This was in HB. I can't speak for the other schools. We did receive something toward, I think it was the very beginning of June, offering some, you know, counseling sessions, which I felt was a little bit on the late end. Can you maybe talk a little bit about what the guidance counselors, what type of curriculum they will be providing to our children as they're coming back to school? Will they be having one-on-one sessions with them to address, you know, how they're dealing, how they're feeling, and how they're adjusting to the virtual learning environment? That was it.
Yes. So so let's start with the easier one right now, since it's fresh on my mind, and we just talked about the counseling perspective. So as is with all of our different areas, one of the areas, the subcommittees that was on the task force to reopen school is all focused on wellness. So we have a number of different staff members and parents, as well as our counselors, who are spearheading that. And there will be efforts made at all grade levels in order to check in with our students and to make sure that we provide that emotional and social support for them from a counseling perspective. That looks different, obviously, at every grade level. So at the elementary schools, for parents who have children there, probably have seen, you know, the Peek-a-Pack curriculum, where we push in with our social workers into our elementary classrooms to identify how our students are feeling. But that effort will definitely be made And that is part of this plan that we are putting together that will be submitted to the state. So that's a big area of focus for our counselors. And then for the from the technology standpoint as well, our counselors will be receiving the same technology that our classroom teachers will be receiving. So that way they are also able to conference with our students and to be able to provide that level of counseling support virtually if those students are not in school on that given day. So we think that that's really important to do. And to go back to your first question around HVAC, so the negotiations that we're going into is still up in the air as to what the timeline will be. We'll have to hear not only on what the price is that comes in through a negotiation with our with these different HVAC firms, but also what their ideas are around the installation process, and what our current school schedule is, and to see if that is possible to be conducted during the year, then the district is committed to getting that work started as soon as possible. We will have to have a lot of conversations with the contractors to find out if that's physically feasible. So it's not out of the question yet to be able to do that. We'll know more when we have our meeting around mid-August, and when I hear what that feedback is, I'll report that out to the board and to the public. So when I mentioned the October 15th, you know, kind of like drop-dead date, and technically it's even before that because we have to make sure the system works, that was really around the fact that, you know, predominantly a lot of the HVAC work in most places happens during the course of a school year in the summertime, as does most construction, but especially the HVAC work. So it could be fully operational by when you would at least need the heating system ready to go. So that's where we currently stand. And I hope that answers your question. If it doesn't, please let me know, and I could elaborate a little bit more.
It does. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks. We have Mr. DeBello.
Yes. This is Stephen DeBello. I live at 31 Brookside Terrace, really close, right behind FN Brown. But I fully understand what the – hi, how are you? I fully understand with the current pandemic, the way the Board of Education is very busy with other priorities, which I've listened through tonight, and I commend you guys. I think with the given task, you guys have been doing a great job. But – I've been presenting this case for months before the pandemic began, and I thought I could bring this up here. My family's experiencing an issue with having our only child attending kindergarten this fall at FM Brown. We bought our house with the consideration that we would be zoned to attend FM Brown, as the previous owner did, and for that matter, everyone else in our neighborhood. So this was a major benefit due to the proximity to be able to walk to school, which is only a two-minute walk. So we're really close, just on the bridge that crosses the Peckman, the walking bridge there. So upon school registration, we were turned away from FM Brown and told our side of Brookside Terrace has been rezoned to Lanning. So we were shocked considering that we can see FM Brown from our front porch. So after some phone calls to the school, we were told to write a letter to Dr. Lanzo, principal of FM Brown. And after hearing back from him, after our initial letter, Dr. Lanzo said that we should include Dr. DiNozio, which we promptly did, and we did get a response back. In all those cases, we asked for a phone call, a meeting, and that's always been never addressed. And even upon calling, we can't get through to either, so that's another thing. But, you know, we're dealing with it with writing back letters, so that's why I'm bringing it up here. If you're familiar with where my street is located, it's a non-through street in Verona consisting of Brookside, Crane, Oak, Franklin. So we've checked with all of our fellow neighbors about their children who walk to school passing our home, you know, every day, and not one neighbor has been rezoned. So we're feeling singled out and would like to know why. And my question is really why we would be rezoned, the only one for a single child,
And also, like, how does the zoning work? Maybe I just fail to understand how you decide to zone who goes where. And that's really my question.
Okay, great. So I'm sorry that you're having had a difficult time with this. I do recall the emails. The issues around zoning are usually pretty clear. The communications ultimately come from my administrative assistant out of my office. The rezoning, I should say, not really rezoning. Your residence or your street has not been rezoned. It's actually been in existence for many, many years. So Brookside Terrace, the west side, has always been designated to go to FN Brown, and the east side has been designated to go to Lanning Avenue School. And that's been in existence for many, many years. And I would imagine that the rationale was based along population and enrollment numbers at some time in the past. There are variations and adjustments, so we do try to accommodate parent requests to attend different schools based on not only if they're close, but for all kinds of different reasons. We accommodate those requests whenever the class size and enrollment allows us to do that. There are instances where that is prohibitive, and it makes it very difficult, because as we honor those requests that deviate from the elementary school district boundary sheet that we have, it ends up creating large class size in another school, which then causes a class size to get close to or over 25 students, which then would cause us to have to split a classroom. And by having to split a classroom and get an additional teacher, so perhaps a class of 25 now becomes 26, or 24 becomes 25, we now split and we have two sections of 12 and 13 kids, and we have to go and hire an additional teacher plus the salary, and that's the salary, the benefits, and the supplies. It's easily an additional $75,000 impact to the school budget. So wherever we could approve those requests, we do. We have a lot of instances where we have families sending their children to schools, elementary schools, outside of their zone where they reside. And our principals work very closely with one another to examine all of the cases. And typically by, we start getting requests in January every year, and we respond to parents that we will put them on the list, and we'll examine everything with the class sizes and the numbers and the enrollment when we get to June. And then our elementary principals sit down together with our administrative assistants, and then they kind of coordinate and see where the class sizes are. Wherever they're able to grant that approval, they let my office know, and we send out those letters. And wherever they're unable to do that, then we send out a letter communicating, unfortunately, we're not able to accommodate that request. And then there have been instances where throughout the summer there's a change in the number of students in a school where...
Okay. I actually have an example of just that. I know of a teacher that's at Lanning where she wanted her child to go... She wanted her child to go to a different school. I think it was FN Brown, actually. Well, how is she allowed to do that? And I live a 2-minute walk versus a 19-minute walk to get to the other school. This makes really – I understand where you're coming from, and that's a valid point, but there's a much simpler approach to this. There's a proximity.
Well, the class sizes at FN Brown, right now are about 24, 25 at that grade level. So they're already very, very large, and that's what's restrictive. So if there's another person who is able to send their child because they're in a different grade, in that given year, that class size may have been like 21 or 22, and that's less of an issue with creating a large class size, especially at that young level. So every circumstance is unique.
Unfortunately, I really don't agree with that, and I don't know where this discrimination is coming from, but this is a ridiculous topic. I can't believe I'm even having to present this case to you guys like this. That's where this is headed. This is ridiculous. The people that lived in the house before us had two children that went to Ephraim Brown, and every single kid on my street goes there. How do I explain to my son when he plays with his neighbors, why do you go to a different school than us?
This is Dan Roberts. We're going to have to leave that one there. You're over your 5 minutes, sir. You can talk about that one offline with the superintendent.
All right, I will. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, hello. We have a 212 number.
Hi, hello. Can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Hi, my name is Hannah Mir. My last name is M-I-R. I'm at 21 Otsego Road. I'd like to have the June 23rd minutes amended. In recapping my comments from that day, it states that I was concerned that racism is not taught in the home. The minutes should state the opposite. I'm concerned that racism is taught in home. Based on my story that I shared last month as a Verona resident with children in our schools, my point was that racism is real here and has affected us. I shared my experience last month to amplify the current need for anti-racist education in our school system that would work to ultimately cross over into anti-racist beliefs in people's homes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll have our acting board secretary, Mr. Turner, will reflect that change in the minutes. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Hi, my name is Julia DiGeronimo.
Hi, Julia. If you could just tell us your address, please.
I live on 66 Morningside Road.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I am one of the organizers of the Black Lives Matter protest that happened back in June, and I have been working alongside Marwa Alessawi and other Verona community members on a petition for the Verona education system. And I'm here to present it along with my other members. Thank you, Mr. DiNuzio, and the other members of the Board of Education for listening to us today and the efforts you have already made. First, I'd like to speak on the Diversity Committee. Diversity Board should be made up of Verona, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color community members. This does not exclude white members because the population of our town is predominantly white. However, this should be used as an opportunity to give our BIPOC of our community a voice and power. The committee must be included in all curriculum decisions as well as repercussions in relation to racism in a school. We ask that their thoughts and opinions aren't considered on every decision that is made and that they are not excluded in any situation. Community members not a part of the committee should also be included in these decisions, making sure everyone's ideas are considered and nobody's thought process is excluded. I'd next like to talk about the code of student conduct and how we request that it must be revised and implement explicit ways to handle racial slurs and other problems that stem from racism. Racism must be addressed and handled differently and more critically in school. We ask these situations are seen as a teaching moment. This is quoted directly from our petition. We require individuals who commit an act of harassment, intimidation, and bullying or otherwise engage in prohibited conduct and or language that targets a protected class to submit an essay to the superintendent with the length to be determined by the principal or superintendent about the historical use and emotional weight of their language, the racial, the culture, or other implications of their actions, and an explanation as to how and why they will improve their behavior in the future. We have seen examples, my partners and I, where racist situations happened in the school, specifically where a male student at BHS was documented using the N-word. From our knowledge, the only repercussions that we heard was receiving a single lunch detention. We do not believe that this is enough, to teach the student why he was wrong and why that word is not tolerable for someone to use. The consequences must be more than a simple lunch detention, and instead teach a student about why he or she is wrong, as well as a suspension from extracurricular activities related to the school, like a sports team or band. Black, Indigenous, and people of color students must feel safe in our school system. And in order for them to be, we need to punish any racist bigotry targeted towards them and teach our students why that is not okay. In order to make sure these students feel safe in our school system, we also like that the student wellness is changed and fixed. To ensure that they feel welcome in the school system, people who may be facing bigotry and racism, we want to work on student wellness. Our counselors, nurses, and other support systems must be developed and adjusted to aid the BIPOC and be a support system that they can rely on. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, students are 21 times more likely to access on-site mental health services. Because of this stat, because of the statistic, it is a desire for our schools to provide systems that can support our students' specific needs. Next, I would like to talk about student testing. We like to ensure that BIPOC have access and are encouraged to enroll in accelerated courses, especially during elementary school. This begins with reading groups in elementary school, establish support systems for BIPOC, including a reading specialist for students who are reading below grade level by fourth grade, which is often cited as the beginning of the school-to-prison pipeline. Lastly, I'd like to speak on student and community engagement. All of the school systems must begin these conversations that I have spoken on already and incorporate them into classes and general assemblies. We ask that all students begin to invite BIPOC speakers to the school and engage in discussions focused around Black Lives Matter, racial justice and equity, systematic institutional racism, white power and privilege, culture and competency and sensitivity, productive allyship and co-conspiratorship, anti-racism and anti-bias. It is very important that our school systems engage in the students with these conversations. Community service requirements will also make sure that students are engaged in neighboring BIPOC communities. Cultural and social justice-oriented clubs will also engage students in the conversation on BIPOC. Lastly, I would just like to comment on the new class that is being introduced on race and culture. And my partners and I really believe that this is a step in the right direction. However, in no means is this enough. In the beginning of this meeting, Mr. Genesio spoke on the AP classes and how those seem to address these issues. I took both AP Lang and AP Lit, and out of those two classes, I only read two books written by a Black author and none by a person of color. And one of those books was my own choice. So we just like to ask that this petition is taken seriously, as well as this one step continues to move on and that you don't stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. And to your peers who organized this effort. A couple of things that I'd like to just add to this, just to piggyback off of Ms. DeGeronimo's comments. First, the task force that we're assembling is made up of over 100 people. So I would imagine, and I know for a fact, actually, because I know some of them personally, that we have a good diverse group of not only backgrounds but also ideas and people that are willing and engaged in this commitment. And they will be taking a look at what our school currently does and does not do, where our strengths lie, or where our areas are that we need to improve. So that's the first thing. And it looks like we're on the right step to that process. And the second thing that I would say is that we as a school take matters of racism, especially as it relates to situations where students are acting inappropriately. We take those things very seriously. And although I can't share specific details, and obviously we can never share any names because of privacy, I could tell you that myself, the administration, and even the board, not specifically, the board's not privy to the students' names, but they're privy to situations that occur without the student identifiers. Every situation that we have of an infraction is, and especially with HIV, harassment, intimidation, and bullying, is handled with an investigation, and then also followed up with remediation. And the remediation always includes what we determine to be, you know, that three-legged stool to try to make sure that we're correcting the behavior and using it as a teachable moment. So there's always a component of education, there's a component of discipline, and there's a component of counseling, both for the offender and the victim and in the situation. And on the education piece, there are all kinds of assignments that students are required to complete. Discipline varies depending on the severity of the infraction and prior history along the situation with the behavior of that student, whether or not it relates to racism. And there's always counseling that's available, and that's an additional point of contact to be able to support the student and have that student grow and learn from that experience, because the goal is to remediate that issue at whatever age that child is. So it's something that we take very seriously, and we recognize that people in the community will hear rumors and have opinions about what happened or did not happen to specific students, but we're not at liberty and we would never share that information. But just trust that, you know, we do handle those things very seriously to make sure that we don't have a problem moving forward. Okay, moving on to our next speaker is Jeremy Smith.
Hi, good evening. This is Caroline Smith, 68 Gertie's Avenue.
Hello, Mrs. Smith.
Hi, good evening. I just had some questions where I'm trying to get clarification on the email that you sent regarding remote learning for the fall. So for context, my child will be attending elementary school at Forest. Is the expected schedule this year that our children are online between 8:30 and 12:30 nonstop, and then that's considered their full school day? Or will there be other things that they'll have to do in the afternoon? And is it the same schedule for the off day, which is Wednesday? And then second to that question.
So that's a great question. If I could answer that, because if I don't, I don't want to forget those components. Those details are still being worked out. But the school day on a month, let's just assume as the schedule stands now, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday will be live in class if it's the students physically there, or it will be synchronous learning from home. So the answer to that is yes. And then on Wednesdays, the school levels, in this case, all four elementary schools are working out what that may look like, and they're working with the teachers. There are all different kinds of ideas that are being thrown around and being shared as to how to use that time, combination of asynchronous instruction versus, you know, doing some more synchronous instruction, but perhaps not all day of synchronous instruction. Perhaps just small reading groups for a shorter period of time. So the elementary principals are working on that component right now. Does that help answer that question?
It does. And, of course, I'm only one person, but the thing that helped me achieve being able to remote school back in March was that we were given the opportunity to do the learning at our own time. So, of course, if my husband and I were in conference calls and meetings, et cetera, we were able to do the school after those meetings, et cetera. So we're just trying to figure out how to do so if we'll be expected to have our kid in front of the computer from 8:30 to 12:30 and then back. So it's just a planning question.
Yeah, and it's a fair one. And we're trying to strike the right balance with, and the right balance is in the eye of the beholder, right? But we're trying to strike the right balance with having a designated amount of time that would be face-to-face, that synchronous learning. So that way there is that communication from a social-emotional standpoint and also from an educational standpoint. It is not our intention right now, and the feedback that I've received from the committee, that in the afternoons that the students would have any more live instruction in the afternoons. There is some consideration for, do we perhaps run some specials in the afternoon, perhaps a music class or a world language class, and whether or not that would happen every day. I don't believe that that would be the case, and those plans have not been solidified as of yet. But there may be some, obviously, like even in a typical school schedule, some homework that students are doing, albeit a short amount, but there may be some independent work that students would be able to do in the afternoon after they go home and then they have their lunch, or if they're home and they have their lunch. But those, all of those details are being worked on right now, and it's still a work in progress. And then once the principals have a better understanding, they'll share that information out with their parents in their school.
Okay. And apologies if this was already addressed as I joined the call kind of late, but what is the estimated timeline that such a communication would be made from the principals?
Yes, that is something we talked about earlier, but not a problem whatsoever. We're still working. We have some committee meetings that are still taking place. Plans are being finalized. We hope that some more details will be able to go out by the end of next week. With a survey that each individual school principal will send out. So then that way they could get a school-specific, class-specific, grade-level-specific assessment as to how many students will opt to come to school and others who will decide to homeschool or stay virtual schooling entirely. And that gives trying to give parents enough time to plan and us enough time to put together the details of a plan so parents can make an informed decision.
Okay. If I have time, I just have a secondary question. So my understanding is there will be a live feed of a teacher teaching their classroom, so the kids that choose to come back to school, but at the same time that class will be live streamed for kids who are choosing to do 100% virtual schooling. So the teacher will be basically teaching two different populations. Is that accurate?
The teacher would be teaching the students in the classroom. So if we were talking about an elementary classroom, presumably, there could be 9 students in the classroom, and the other 9 students could be home on this given day. So the teacher would be teaching the same lesson, but the students at home would be watching it through the high-definition camera through the Google Meet Enterprise suite and interacting that way. There's a function for them to raise their hand and ask questions and interact, and that's all of the professional development and support we want to make sure that we're providing our teachers prior to the start of school.
And would we be able to, should we decide to virtually homeschool and then say we decide with our neighbor that we're going to let neighbor A kind of help the kids through the homeschool on Monday and neighbor B will help the kids through the homeschool on Tuesday, that kind of thing. Would we be able to request that neighbor A's kids and neighbor B's kids be in the same class? That way we could facilitate that easier.
You know, so, you know, any of those specific requests, if you have them, I can't promise that they would be, there would be an accommodation, but I would imagine that our schools would try. But I would direct those specific questions to your building principal, who will be kind of managing all of this and the scheduling with our other administrative team members and the administrative assistants. So I think that's probably your best bet to go and ask the question to, and at least get that in front of the principal. For consideration, one of the things that we are trying to do is coordinate sibling schedules as best as possible across schools, just to recognizing that that could be an additional burden with children in multiple schools. There's no foolproof plan, but that's something that we would definitely try to do. So if you have that specific concern, I would recommend that you just reach out to Mr. Monticelli and express that to him, and I'm sure he'll do whatever he can in order to accommodate.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay, we have Mrs. Bernardino, who's up next.
Good evening, Michelle Bernardino, 34 Elk Road. So there are many, many things that I was inspired to call in for tonight, but first I want to just give a shout-out to Julia DiGeronimo, who I have known since she was a very little girl, and I am just really proud of the young people kind of coming forward with these social justice issues and really proud of her tonight. So I just wanted to start with that. I did have another question that was already answered, but I also want to give a shout out to every single teacher in Verona. No teacher signed up for this and no teacher asked for this. And while I feel like our community is somewhat divisive right now on teaching and where we stand, and while some teachers maybe handled remote learning differently than others, we were very reactive to this happening in March. And I think as we talk about social emotional well-being of our students, we need to consider social emotional well-being of our teachers and staff as well. And I think everybody's really just doing the best that they can. And I just want to give just a kudos to the teachers for doing what they do. I have three children in the district and just really proud of just the teaching profession right now and where they are. With that, I also want to say thank you personally to every single Board of Ed member right now, because you have been put in a difficult position, which happens time and time again. But with COVID happening and live graduation requests and videotaping graduations and remote learning and reopening plans, I know none of that is easy, and I want to thank you for the work that you do, volunteering your time and putting in hours and effort to do that. And last, Dr. Dionisio, as your former neighbor, as a former Board of Ed member, as an educator and a school administrator, I want to thank you for your leadership. I would be honored to work with you, work under you, and I appreciate all that you do for our community and for our students. And that's all I'd like to say.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Bernardino. Really appreciate that.
Keep fighting the good fight, people. Our students deserve it and our teachers deserve it.
Thank
you.
Have
a good night.
Next up, we have a 201 number.
This is George Kozacek, 100 Morningside Road, Verona. I have a couple of questions. The technology purchase, is that compatible with the current Chromebooks that are owned by the school that will be used to hand out to students?
Yes.
And as far as sports go, contact sports, how will you keep contact sports safe, wearing masks? Sports like soccer, football, field hockey are very much contact sports. Sports like tennis, golf, baseball are not so much contact sports.
So our director of athletics, Mr. Merkler, has put out a plan which is in alignment with the NJSIA regulations.
I read that. But you're talking about safety and masks and whatnot and keeping social distancing, but football players hit each other, teams get together, they're across, they're not going to be wearing masks, they're going to be touching each other, there's spit flying, there's fluid flying around, but yet it doesn't seem to align with all of the other safety that's going on in the school, especially since what's going on in sports right now. So as far as guidelines today in sports and what's going on in sports, Mm-hmm. It's two different things. The other thing I'm asking is when you put the addenda, when you put the referendum together, there's also a dollar amount that's set aside for the unknown, usually, and that would help with any change orders and things of that nature. Did the school have this amount of dollars also to help with change orders and things of increase in price for HVAC?
Yes. But as I mentioned earlier, the COVID situation impacted not only the manufacturing, it scared contractors away from being able to do the work. It impacted the price with the timeline after they didn't bid the first time around and they bid a month later with manufacturing delays and the cost to get premium spot in obtaining the HVAC equipment, and compound that with bringing in more workers in order to double or triple their staff in order to be able to meet the timelines, to be able to get the work done prior to the start of school, made it prohibitive. So there's always money that's built in for contingency. We have that across all of our referendum projects. That's why all 17 of them are running except for the elementary and the middle school HVAC.
And last, where is the money coming from for the technology that you're purchasing now that I believe that you had quoted $500,000 as a purchase price? Is this getting passed along to the taxpayer?
No, that's not how it works. We can't pass that along to the taxpayer. School budgets are fixed as on a 2% tax levy cap. So we can't go, and the only way we can obtain more money from the taxpayer is for a referendum by a vote or by a second question by vote. So our budget's fixed. So it wasn't a $500,000 number. It was a number just short of $400,000. That's being financed over the course of 5 years at a low interest rate because we don't have $400,000 to go and purchase technology in that manner in one lump sum. So it's being purchased on a payment plan, as we've done with other technology in the past. And we had to make additional cuts in our supply accounts and repurpose what we use money for in order to be able to come up with that money.
So that money does not get passed along in any other way to the taxpayer? Next year, the year after, it doesn't get passed along?
No, that's
okay.
Prohibited by law.
Okay, that's it. Great, thanks.
Thank you.
Hello.
Our next caller, 973-619.
Hi, my name is Marwa Alessoui, and my address is 36 Martin Road, Rona, New Jersey. A group of us drafted a resolution calling for racial justice and equity in our schools, and the petition was signed by over 1,500 people. First, I would like to thank Dr. D'Amicio for all his work so far. We really appreciate it, and we're happy to hear about the race task force. Once established, we believe that its engagement with our action items is pivotal for fostering an inclusive, justice-oriented environment. I will pick up where Julia left off and address other actions, including faculty and staff, curriculum, and potential partnerships with neighboring towns. I'm not able to share all of our action items because of time, but the petition is made public for anyone to view. So first off, I am deeply concerned about the way in which an overwhelming number of students graduate from Rona High School with the notion that we live in a post-racial society rather than understanding systemic racism. And I'm very tired of this sanitized curriculum. Racial and social topics are not integrated in our education, but rather added here and there to achieve curriculum requirements. So we first ask for the critical examination and transformation of K through 12 history, social studies, and other relevant curricula to address the struggles of people of color by incorporated neglected topics. Personally speaking, my Rona public education has failed me in such critical fields of racial and social consciousness. For instance, in U.S. history, I was taught that slaves were freed, but I was never taught that they were immediately recaptured and forced to perform free labor, and that this was the start of mass incarceration in America. I never learned about the war on drugs started by Nixon, which intentionally ravaged black and brown communities. And instead, I learned about brutal colonizers who were disguised as discoverers, and I only learned about MLK during a truncated civil rights timeline instead of a vibrant panoply of civil rights leaders such as Malcolm X and Ella Baker. And when Malcolm X is brought up, which he briefly is sometimes, he's portrayed as this violent contrast to MLK, which is detrimentally misleading. So we are also asking for the implementation of anti-racism and justice-oriented texts, articles, films, and other materials that are produced for intersectional, that are produced by people of color during all the 4 years of the English and other relevant curricula. We ask for an intersectional focus that connects race to class and gender while addressing sexism, ableism, Islamophobia, and other forms of prejudice. And this is really important because it's not only about race. The new English course, Race, Culture, and Identity, is a great start, but AP and honors courses also fall short in teaching about race, as Julia covered. And courses centering the history and experiences of people of color must target all grade levels. No student is too young to learn about race. Children begin using race to reason about people's behaviors at 2 years old and even express racial prejudice between ages 4 and 5. And explicit conversations with 5 to 7 years old about interracial friendship can dramatically improve their racial attitudes in as little as a single week. Moving on to faculty and staff, we believe that it is critical to hold cultural competency and anti-racism professional development for existing faculty and staff while actively recruiting people of color who are well-versed in teaching about race and ethnicity. And lastly, we would love to see the Verona School District partner with and encourage surrounding districts to execute these action items, as well as develop an anti-racist education network and develop a plan to become a member of the Montclair State University Network for Educational Renewal, because we're not, and many other towns nearby us are, and it's very odd. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Marwa. Appreciate you speaking, and I think we have a lot of work to continue to dive into, so I'm looking forward to seeing where it takes us.
Thank you.
Next speaker, 973 number. Hello?
Hi, this is Veronica Erickson. I'm at 223 Claremont Avenue. Do you have a plan established for the preschool program, or is it supposed to mirror what's happening from K through 4? Thank you.
No, the preschool program is going to be like one of those exceptions that we wrote in the letter, so I would encourage you to speak to Mr. Moriello about that, our Director of Special Services. I know that other parents, he has spoken with them over the past few days on the phone to just provide some clarity and at least to give an understanding of where we are at. So as it relates to not only our preschool program, but also some of our self-contained special education classes. So we're looking at all of those options to create some more frequency for those children to come into school on a more regular basis. So I would encourage you to reach out to him directly, and he could share with you what the progress is there and perhaps answer any of your questions.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Great. Thank you very much for all the people who came to the podium. I appreciate everybody's comments, and everything is being recorded and will be reviewed and taken into account. So I do appreciate the amount of turnout tonight and public interest. It's, you know, it's anxiety-inducing and very stressful for everybody, and it's all good conversations. So thank you again. If we have nothing else, I am going to ask for a motion to officially close the meeting. Before we close the meeting, I just want to remind the public that the next meeting is Monday, August 17th. We put a meeting in on that date just recently, and then we also have a regularly scheduled August meeting, which will be the following Monday, the 24th. So our next meeting, again, is August 17th, Monday at 7 p.m. for this public session. So can I please have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion, Mr. Day.
Motion moved by Mr. Day. I need a second.
Second, Mr. Allworth.
Seconded by Mr. Allworth. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? No one is opposed, so the meeting is adjourned at 9:41 p.m. And I want to thank everybody again for the attention for the whole meeting and for everybody's participation.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Drive home.
Good night, everyone.